in just a few moments, I'm going to show you a little DVD that explains in pictures and words what I can probably do in half an hour, and the DVD can do it in 10 minutes. So in the interests of time, I'm going to ask you to just patiently watch that and try to get an idea of what insightful living is about. My name is Terry Boyle. I'm a pastor. And when I was 26 years old, I moved to Texas. I moved there to marry, in fact. I moved there for matrimony and adventure. But over there, Christ won my heart, and I studied for the ministry there, and I trained at seminary in Dallas. And I was pastoring a church in Dallas for several years before my wife and I came back here. I was approached while I was in that pastorate. I was approached by Insightful Living. Chuck Swindoll found out about me because at that time they had been looking to establish a ministry, a satellite ministry, but an independent satellite, if you catch my drift, here in the UK, to represent Chuck's ministry, which is it's a ministry with a long pedigree, more than 35 years of international broadcasting. They wanted to establish Chuck's ministry in a more personal, in a more accessible way for our UK and European audience. And so they were looking for a pastor who shared Chuck's theology, who shared Chuck's passion for the scriptures, who would be able to represent him here in the UK, speak on his behalf, and host his radio program, and perhaps, as I'll explain a little bit later on, do a little bit of broadcasting of my own. And how that all began and how it all came together and who staffs the ministry down in Dorking is what you're about to find out for about the next 10 minutes. So if we could please just play the DVD. That explains the ministry, I hope. A couple of things that I will explain that have come up as questions in response to that sometimes. How do we stay on the air? How do we stay funded? We are a registered charity in the UK. How does that work? Well, our listeners support us. The people who like the message that we have, the people who enjoy straightforward Bible teaching on the radio, hopefully they're prompted to chip in a little bit and keep us on the air. That's our only means of support. That's the way it's been for 34 years now. It's always been supported by our listeners. So that's how. In terms of the costs that we need to meet, broadcasting costs are our largest expense. We pay the radio stations. Some of you may listen to Premier Radio or UCB or Transworld Radio or some of the other Christian radio stations around the country and around Europe. We pay them to broadcast our program. We rent airtime from them, if you understand that. So they are the gallery. We are the artist. We hang our work in their gallery, and we pay them for the privilege of doing that. That is our biggest expense. On a year-to-year basis, that is easily more than our payroll. It's easily more than the rent and the light bill. It's our biggest chunk of expense, is to keep the broadcast on the air, because it's a very expensive proposition. It's about 38% of our annual budget just goes to pay Premier Radio, Transworld Radio, and United Christian Broadcasters. We pay them the airtime. So that's how we raise our money, and that's how we spend it. We have had one development since that DVD was made, and that is that I am now teaching my own little Bible spot on the radio on weekends. I teach a 15-minute program on Premier Radio on Saturday evenings and on Sunday afternoons. And we just started that this July. And it's a great adventure, let me put it that way. It's a good discipline for me to have to meet broadcasting deadlines and to have something that at least sounds intelligent to say on the radio once in a while. So it's a very good thing for me to be doing, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it, although it is a challenge when it comes to time and how I spend my time. A lot of my time is spent doing just this. I travel up and down the country, occasionally to continental Europe, but mostly in the UK. I travel up and down preaching the word of God in churches, usually at the invitation of a listener, someone who already enjoys our broadcast. And I believe that's how I came to be here for the ladies' meeting a couple of weeks ago, and that's how I came to be here as well. So thank you for the invitation. When I say the word Heath Robinson, what springs to mind? Now, for some of you, that may not mean anything at all. But Heath Robinson was, he was a draftsman, a designer, but he was a cartoonist, and he used to draw contraptions. He used to draw extraordinary machines that went to extraordinary lengths to achieve very simple, straightforward things. He drew the plans for a machine that would peel a potato. It involved a pedal, a huge flywheel, a spinning knife, a bucket of potatoes, a water hose, and a very angry wife in the kitchen. He drew plans for a machine that would pick up cigarette ends from the street. He did it by creating this huge wheel, like a steamroller wheel, that was constantly dripped on with glue. And the driver, the pilot of the machine, would have to spot a cigarette end or a sweet wrapper in the street, and he'd have to steer for it, and he'd drive over it. It would stick to the glue on the wheel, and he would pick it off with a spatula as it came by in front of his face. Heath Robinson made these extraordinary contraptions in his imagination, and I love them. I used to make things like it in my dad's garage. Oh, he hated that, because I'd use all his pulley wheels and all the bits and pieces he had, and I would never put them away properly again, so we won't talk about that anymore. I'd like to describe for you a contraption. It's a machine. It's a machine for making something. It's a machine that creates believers. Oh. Well, that's a curious sort of machine, isn't it? It's described for us by Paul, not by Heath Robinson, but by Paul. And there is a linkage in a machine that Paul describes for us in Romans chapter 10. And he describes the machine for us, but he describes it for us in reverse order. What Paul was looking for, what Paul was always looking for, was people who would cling to Christ, call upon the name of the Lord, and be saved. Paul was always looking for people who would believe in Christ and step from doom to blessing. And in fact, the book of Romans, what we call a book, is actually a letter. It's a letter that Paul wrote to the Christians in Rome. He hadn't been to Rome yet. He didn't know them all. He was writing a letter in advance saying to them, I have a plan to go from where I am now in Greece all the way across the Mediterranean to Spain. He had an ambition to go to Spain, where the gospel had never yet been heard. And he needed help from the believers in Rome to get him there. He needed some missionary support. The book of Romans is actually a mission support letter. He asks for help from the church in Rome so that he can get to Spain to preach the gospel. And in the middle of the book, here in chapter 10, he sort of outlines quite subtly why that is such an important request. Now remember, what he's really looking for is believers. He wants new Christians. He wants Christians to turn to God in faith and be saved. And he knows that everyone who believes in God will not be put to shame. He says that in chapter 10 and verse 11. Everyone who believes in him will not be put to shame, for there's no distinction between Jew and Greek, for the same Lord is Lord of all, bestowing his riches on all who call on him. What he's saying is, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you're from, it doesn't matter your background or your origins, you are all qualified to believe in Christ and to be saved. He says it, he says as much in verse 13. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Isn't that a wonderful thing? That is our product. That's what we want to make. That's the be-all and end-all, really, of mission. Mission, however you define it, however you describe it, however you go about it, is to do with people finding Christ and being saved. And Paul says that is our goal. He wants to go to Spain to do it. But he says, how, verse 14, how will they call on him in whom they haven't believed? Well, it's a fair question. You can't just invent the notion of God and decide you want to be saved. It takes a little understanding. It takes a little knowledge. Now, back at the beginning of Romans, Paul said that that knowledge, if you discern it carefully, is actually available to you from the things you see in the world around you. God's power and his wisdom has been seen in the things that he has created. But sometimes people don't find God that way. Sometimes they need a hint. Sometimes they need to be told. Sometimes they need to hear about God instead of just seeing about God. Now, for myself, I started out life as a biochemist. I was a scientist. I wore a white lab coat, and I had safety glasses, and I had a pocket protector, and I was an enzymologist, a biochemist. And I wasn't a believer. But the more I studied biochemistry, the more I studied science, and the science in particular of living things, the science of life, the more I studied it, the more I became convinced deep in my soul that what I was studying was actually far too elegant, far too organized, and far too magnificent to have been accidental. Because you see, as a scientist, I was taught coming through university that all of that organization in life was accidental. It just came out of nowhere. It just happened. My studies, my scientific studies, took me in exactly the opposite direction. They took me to a place where I became convinced that this had to have been designed. This had to have been organized. But I didn't know what to do with that information. I'd gotten to a place that Paul would have recognized out of Romans chapter 1. I came to an understanding that God existed from what I'd seen in his creation, in the order, in the organization, in the beauty of living things. I'd come to an understanding that God must exist, but I hadn't heard the gospel. I didn't know what to do with the information about God existing. And in fact, I had to go to Texas before I heard the gospel. I had to go all the way there, had to be married. I had to start tagging along to church. My wife and I, as newlyweds, used to just go to church. I had no problem with that. I didn't disagree with the idea of God, but I didn't know how to approach him. I didn't know how to deal with him. I was convinced that he existed, but I knew nothing else about it. And little by little, as I listened to sermons, thankfully we went to good Bible teaching churches. And little by little, as the messages settled in and as the bits and pieces of the puzzle started to lock together in the tabletop of my mind, as the jigsaw started to take shape, I came to realize that, okay, what I knew about God, that was the beginning. That was the foundation. Yes, he is the creator God. Yes, he is responsible for everything that we see. But how do I come to him? That I had to find out from people preaching. That I had to find out from people teaching me the scriptures and what they say about Jesus Christ. And it wasn't until I started to hear that that the whole picture started to take shape. So this particular text is really precious to me, because it was by the hearing of the preaching of the gospel of Christ that I was able to make sense out of the God that I knew existed, but didn't know how to approach and didn't know how to deal with, didn't know that I was supposed to deal with him. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? Now, I'd believed in God, but I hadn't realized that it was necessary for me to call on him for salvation. Here's the next part of the machine. If we have a believer here as our product, he's the sausage of our sausage machine, if you want to think of it that way. Here's our believer. The next step back, the next cog back in the machine, has to be somebody speaking to him. How are they to believe in him of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? Here's another cog. The sausage, the Christian, the believer, the end product. The hearing process, a cog in the machine. The speaking process, a cog in the machine. You have to have a speaker for there to be a hearer, and you have to hear for there to be faith. It's very logical the way Paul draws it out. He's drawing us out a very, very elegant contraption. It's got cogs and things in it. I love it. The engineer in me just sings. How are they to hear without someone preaching? And now here's the critical one. Here is the spring in the mechanism. How are they to preach unless they are sent? That's the spring. I don't know if you're familiar with pinball machines or bagatelle machines or whatever else, but you have this little spring and a plunger, and it shoots a ball bearing out into the mechanism of the game. The sender in the church, the one who sends the speaker, is the driving force behind the whole thing. The sender is the spring in the machine. That's what gives it its trajectory, its impetus, its velocity. There have to be senders. So in this machine, in this what I call the gospel contraption, there are no gaps. There's no slippage in the mechanism. You are either a new believer, the product of the machine, or you're listening and you're on your way to becoming a believer, like I was for a while. Or you're talking about it. You are actually the transmission cog that is speaking out the gospel. Or you're the sending spring. And people, there are no gaps in the machine. You have to be, if you're in the machine, you have to be one of those. There's no wastage in God's economy. Nobody is there just to warm a seat. Everybody is there to do something. And the question you have to ask yourself is, well, what am I? Am I listening and on my way to being a believer? Am I actually talking the faith? Am I a speaker? Am I one who goes? And you don't have to go far You can go over the garden fence. You can go to the coffee shop. You can go to the chip shop. You don't have to go far to be the one who's sent. But if you're not the new believer, and if you're not listening with hopes of becoming a new believer, and if you're not the speaker, then sure as beans, you're supposed to be the spring. You're supposed to be the sender. You're supposed to be doing something to enable people to go out and talk the gospel. So what are you? Which are you? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I would like everyone in the room to think, what am I? Where do I fit in this machine? If I don't feel right talking about my faith, then I should be at least sending someone who does. Shouldn't I? Because there aren't any other pieces. Paul, in this description, in this blueprint for the gospel contraption, he doesn't have any room here for spectators. He doesn't have any room here for people who are just watching it happen. You're in the machine or you're not. And my challenge constantly is to make people aware of that. See, the way my ministry has worked out and the way that God has wired me, I'm the one who's talking. Sometimes people even listen. But I have to be sent. It has to be made possible for me to go and do and speak. I mean, it doesn't just happen by osmosis. I have to be able to go. When Insightful Living approached me in Texas, I had a really nice church. It was going well. I'd been there for quite a few years and had some traction going, and we were getting some movement in the community, and a lot was going right. But God decided to say, Terry, you're being sent. You're going. Now, my church, up until that point in Dallas, had been a sending church. We had a huge mission budget. More than 40% of our annual budget went out of the church to mission work. That was quite a big percentage for not a really big church. But it turned around, and I became the one who was sent. So my place in the machine sort of shifted a bit. I had been a sender and a speaker. Now I was sent as a speaker. And here I am, speaking as often and as much and as long and as loud as I can. But what I have to do is challenge you. Are you a sender? Or are you a speaker? Or are you just listening? Or are you a brand new believer? Now, if you're a brand new believer, if you're a sausage, if you're the product of the gospel machine, then you have to learn that sometime, hopefully soon, you'll become part of the machine. And it'll be a new gospel machine, with you as the spring, as the sender, or with you as the speaking cog, or with you encouraging people to listen to the gospel. That's why it's so good to see young people in a Wednesday night meeting. Because if we don't raise up a new generation of senders and speakers, what hope do we have? Because that's how the gospel works. It works from sending people to speak. And if we don't raise up a new generation, then it all stops here. I don't want to put too much pressure on your shoulders. I don't want to sort of lean on you too hard. But it's never too soon to start deciding, okay, what am I? Am I a new believer? Am I listening? Should I be talking? Or am I going to be a sender? And even as young as you are, it's time to start asking those questions. some people know in their hearts early on that they're going to go and speak. Some people, it takes a long time. I was in my late 20s before I even found Christ or before he wooed me. I regret that. I wasted a lot of time. There was a lot of traction I could have had that I missed out on. Don't miss out on traction. If it's yours, take it. Do it. But know where you fit. This gospel machine, this mechanism, it works everywhere, and it always has. It's worked all through history. This is how the gospel works. This is what Paul was encouraging the Roman church to do for him. He was basically winding them up as a spring to send him to Spain so that he could do the talking, so that there would be people who would listen, so that there would be new believers in Spain where the gospel had never been heard before. There are still places where the gospel has never been heard before. Even 2,000 years later, there are still places where the gospel has never been heard. There are places where the gospel has been heard and forgotten about and plowed under. There are places like that in this country. I said, you don't have to go far. But if you're not going to go, then you have to be committed to send. So my appeal to you is to be a speaking church. Don't be ashamed of the gospel. Don't hide behind politeness. If you're a Christian, don't be afraid of saying it in the supermarket. If you're a Christian, don't be embarrassed by the idea. If you're a Christian, it's okay. Just tell them. I was talking to a friend just the other night. In fact, he had gone to visit another friend who was in hospital. And this friend of mine is quite a new believer. He hasn't been in the faith more than a year or so. And he was talking to another lady in the hospital ward who didn't seem to have any friends and seemed to be a bit down. So he went over and talked to her. And he said to her, how are you doing? You seem a little sad. She explained her situation to him, and it was sad. And he said, well, you know, I'm really sorry to hear that. Tell me your name. And she said, why? He said, so that I can pray for you. Her eyes opened up like saucers. She said, why would you want to do that? He said, well, it's really all I can do. I'm not a doctor, so I can't help you there. But I am a Christian, and so I can help you with that. Started a conversation. She was listening. And it was so easy to just slide into that conversation under those circumstances. You have to wait. You have to wait for the door to open. But when the door opens, step in. Step in and speak. There is no shame in being a Christian. None. So as for me, I find myself as a sent speaker. I've been sent back to the UK to speak the gospel of Christ. It's what I love to do. It's my passion. I love to study the word, and I love to make the word plain so that people can go on and do what it says. It's my passion. But what's your passion? Are you a speaker? Or are you a sender? There are no other places in the machine. No spare cogs. No spare parts. If you're not one, you must be the other. Pray with me once more. Our Father, what a joy to to open your word and to see it for what it says, to be moved in our hearts and minds and spirits by what you have said. Encourage us, Lord, where we are faint of heart or anxious or nervous. Be with us. Walk with us. Give us strength. Lord, give us boldness of speech. Let us not be ashamed of the gospel. Give us feet that are ready to go. Give us minds that are eager to share your wisdom in a dark world. Because we love you, Lord. You sent your Son to die for us, even when we didn't deserve it. And it's the least we can do. Amen. I finished just a couple of minutes early. But if you'd like to come and lead us in prayer or another song, I would be happy with that.